Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. So check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. Farmer owned, Vermont grown, Sunset Lake CBD.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey, listeners. I want to tell you about a sponsor, Music Masters Collective. They're a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. Every week, they host different events, all with the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like Oteil Burbridge, Trouble No More, former members of The Band, Milk Carton Kids, Nikki Glaspie, Bill Frisell, Sean Colvin, and many more. This June, join the Fab Four, Joan Osborne, John Sebastian, Marshall Crenshaw, and a great group of faculty for the debut of Magical Mystery Camp. This all-inclusive, once-in-a-lifetime music vacation experience in the heart of the Catskills will be packed with nightly performances, workshops, speakers, song circles, open mics, and a lot more. If you're a performing musician at any level, bring your instrument. If you're a music lover, bring your good spirit. It's an amazing experience for individuals, friends, and couples alike. Registration is open, spots are filling up, so check it out soon. And scholarships are available. Check out magicalmysterycamp.com/helpingfriendly to learn more.
Strange how the night moves. With autumn closing in. Night moves.
Night moves. Hey, everybody. This is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 165. I'm here with the co-founder of the Helping Friendly Podcast, Brad Tenbrook. Hi, Brad.
Hi, RG. How are you?
Good. It's good to be back. We're on a little bit of a streak of you and me doing podcasts together again, which is nice.
Two in a row.
That's like basically the longest streak in history of anything. So this episode, we're going to run through some fall 2009 stuff and talk about some shows and some clips and, you know, get people psyched for these shows coming up in a couple of weeks. Right, Brad?
Yeah. Thanksgiving, holidays, all these things are coming up. And we thought it'd be fun to dive back. Not too far back.
I was in a conversation with someone the other day on the internet about this show and how we used to do full sets and we used to do full shows. Back when we started, Brad and I would have like 3.5 hour podcasts where like we would play full sets and then we would give some commentary. We've done more recently, like what we're doing today, which is like run through some stuff, play some clips, and kind of integrate the music as we go. But if you feel strongly about either of these formats, let us know, because if you've been like, you know, waiting for us to keep playing full sets, we can tell you why we decided not to do that, but we don't want to disappoint our listeners. So tell us what you like about, you know, that versus what we're doing now, or both, because we want to hear from you. So tweet at us or send us emails. You can email us at helpingfriendlypodcast@gmail.com, and Brad will personally answer those and say things to you. All right. Before we get into the show, we're going to tell you about a few Osiris happenings. The first is a podcast called Let Creativity Flow, sponsored by Splice. It's a 3-episode series exploring the evolution of music and technology through the eyes of artists, music industry professionals, entrepreneurs, and journalists. It's a new show. We interviewed John Barber and Aaron Magner of The Biscuits, Steve Martosi of Splice, Andy Weissman of Union Square Ventures, and lots of others. This podcast is hosted and narrated by Amar Sastry, creator of the Anatomy of a Jam series, which you all know and love. So check out osirispod.com/creativity to check out this show. It's just a three-episode series. It's out now, so I will include a link to that in the show notes. Brad, have you had a chance to listen to After Midnight, episode 1?
Of course I have. It was incredible.
What did you think about
it?
It
was so good. I texted you immediately upon the credits at the end. I thought it was great. Such a good story. And the start of them. Really well produced as well, I must say. Matt, who really helped the Helping Friendly podcast step up its game,
man.
Has
totally
shown his true talents, right?
Oh, man. He is like taking his talents to a new level. He's going to take his talents to South Beach next. But it's awesome. We're getting tons of feedback. I got an awesome phone call from my friend who is not a Fish fan and said that he enjoyed the podcast so much, even as not a Fish fan. And I think that the production value, as Brad was saying, the storytelling, the stuff we're doing, is indicative of the kind of stuff we're going to keep doing with Osiris. So hopefully everyone who's listening to this has already listened to episode 1 of After Midnight. After Midnight episode 2 will come out this Thursday, the 21st. So we will include a link to listen and subscribe if you don't have that.
Let me say one more thing.
Yes.
That I left out. Amar did some of the tunes or music on After Midnight. And he's a huge contributor to Osiris. He's awesome.
He's so good.
One of the best things he does is his Instagram page, which I love. You know, with the Fish tunes, and he plays them on his acoustic.
Oh,
and it's so exciting.
And
he
shares those on Twitter too, and he gets thousands and thousands of views because people love his perspective. And I will say that all of those tunes that are in After Midnight were created using Splice. So look at that. So, all right, Brad, I know you're not going to be around New York in December, but for those people who are, on December 6th, we're going to have this first event of a series called Jam Just Happened with Scott Metzger, Aaron Magner, Adam Chase, Jay White, and they are going to jam for a couple hours, and it'll be all improv, and we will be there. Osiris people will be there. Tom's going to introduce them and say a few words, and that'll be fun. There are tickets on sale. It's at New Blue, and if you're not coming, but if you're in town on December 6th, the people who are in and around New York City and not going to Charleston to see Fish, right? So this is like it's kind of a Fish alternative party, but it's for people who weren't, you know, going to go anyway, because this is going to be awesome, but people who are going to Charleston probably aren't canceling their plans, but maybe they should. It's probably gonna be pretty sweet.
Well, maybe.
Would you?
They could do both.
Do both.
Yeah.
You can do both. You could pretty easily do both.
Yeah.
Okay. So the last thing, December 30th. Keep this on your radar. Again, New York City. December 30th, always a great show for Fish, and we're gonna actually keep the jams going after the show on December 30th at Le Poisson Rouge for Electric in the Village, presented by Osiris Media with Riley Walker, Chris Forsyth, and Garcia Peoples. So each of these three artists have had amazing records this year and performed residencies throughout New York City. They're all like indicative of this future of kind of the overlap of jam and psychedelic rock, and they're all amazing. And I saw Chris Forsyth and Garcia Peoples in September in New York at New Blue, and it was awesome. And these three artists are teaming up for a show on December 30th, after show, 10-minute ride downtown on the A-line. It's going to go deep into the night, and and kind of expand this collective, you know, sound that these three groups are creating. So Osiris is really proud to be presenting this, and you'll hear more about that. But you can get tickets now at lpr.com, $15 in advance, $20 day of show. $1 for each ticket purchase will be donated to the Water Wheel Foundation. Do you know the Water Wheel Foundation, Brad?
I've heard of it.
Some of the Osiris team will be there. Come hang out. And we actually are going to, I think we're going to announce a new podcast at that after show.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening. So check the show notes if you're just overwhelmed by all the amazing stuff and you don't know where to click, because you can click on everything. Okay. So, Brad, we're going to go back into the archives. We're going to go back to the fall of 2009, as we used to say back then, right?
Yes. Yes. As the boomers would say.
Yeah. It was kind of crazy because that was... Although, of course, that was Phish's first year back from hiatus. But they had played so many shows between, you know, March at Hampton, which we were at, and then tons of summer shows. So by the time it got to fall, I think they were still kind of figuring it out. But these shows, now that I was listening back, to me, they felt like even more developed than maybe I give it. I feel like 2009 doesn't get a ton of credit, even the fall. What did you think going into like listening back to a bunch of these shows?
We don't give it enough credence, right? Don't pay it enough attention. And they were really good shows, way better than I remember. I mean, we all remember a jam or two specifically. We'll talk about the one I think that everybody knows. But yeah.
Did you go to any shows besides Hampton that year?
No, they didn't. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny cause they played some of our old stomping grounds, but I was out here in Phoenix at this point. It's been a couple of years. So like I didn't get to go to the Cincinnati shows, which I would have, the Detroit, you know, those, that I would have done before I moved out. So, I missed them all.
You missed them.
Noob.
it's kind of the story of your Phish life.
Yeah.
Missed them all.
Yeah.
Except for the cool ones you get to see in California, which is cool.
Yep. 3.0.
So 3.0 life.
So they finished, Festival 8 on the 1st of November, 2009. And the first show thereafter was the Detroit show on 11/18. So that's why we started there. And then, they play MSG. They start, you know, they play three nights in a row actually at Madison, at the Garden, on December 2nd. But we cut those shows off and just stuck to this little 11-12 day run, that was only in November, culminating in, you know, the Thanksgiving Day weekend.
Let's start with the Detroit show, Wednesday night, November 18th, Cobo Arena, Detroit. Have you been to Cobo Arena? I don't think I ever have.
I have. I don't think it's there anymore. They now have Little Caesars Arena or something.
Okay.
It's a new arena downtown that the Wings and the Pistons play at. But
cool.
Yeah.
Was this like a big place or small?
No, it wasn't too big. Maybe 8,000, if you know, downtown.
Yeah.
Old school. I bet Seeger's played there a bunch for sure.
I'm sure that he was working on the night moves at that place at some point or another. Brad, what did you think of this show? It's got a 3.4 rating on fish.net. I feel like a lot of these shows kind of mid-November of 09 don't really get revisited a lot.
Yeah.
Did you have any thoughts on this show?
No, I thought it was, to me, it was very familiar to what I thought of 09, which is a lot of songs, pretty standard, like a AC/DC opener first set, Runaway Jim opener second set, into, you know, then they followed that with a Disease. So closed the first set with Bowie, you know, just kind of a very familiar, kind of reminded me a little bit of Hampton, where they're going through a lot of the songs. Nothing was too deep, but
yeah,
that not to say they weren't starting to, you could start to hear some jams, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. And this was, you know, kind of a warm-up show, the first show coming off of the Halloween, which clearly, I mean, it's interesting with Halloween because in later years, like Wingsuit and Thrilling Chilling and Caspat Vox, when they're playing their own music and creating new music around a Halloween, I think you get a lot more forward movement in terms of improv, whereas like, you know, prepping to cover Exile on Main Street, which is one of my favorite albums of all time, that probably didn't like yield a lot of musical, like forward musical momentum, if that makes sense, because they were sort of just rehearsing and running through
improv or whatever,
those
right.
songs, you know,
mm-hmm.
Which is just sort of interesting. But I do think this Down's Disease, like you said, sort of has a little bit of what we'll come to see later on. Jonathan wanted us to include a quote from Wax Banks, Wally, our friend and guest, former guest, always welcome back, Wally. He said about the Down's Disease, "It's a paying off of Trey's year-long experiment with seemingly out-of-place flatted ninths and minor modes in the middle of soaring major chord jams. The last couple minutes of this version see the whole band get with him for some woolly, W-O-O-L-Y, Eastern modal fun," which, you know, as Brad and I mean, Brad and I totally agree with all of that. But I do think it's like, it's pretty out there at times, which is pretty cool to hear for 2009, right? A little bit of a preview of what's to come. They move on. Oh, I would say also from the 18th, if you want to hear a well-played 3.0 foam, this is one of them, which is cool. I feel like they must have practiced it. But they move on to Cincinnati for two nights, Brad, for a Friday, Saturday humdinger in Cincinnati, as they call it down in Cincy.
Yeah, they do.
if you were in Ohio, if either of us were in Ohio, we would have been at these shows, but we weren't. But I feel like they started to get a little bit more into the groove with these two. Did you have any highlights from the first show, the 20th?
We forgot to mention that, you know, before Festival 8 and those shows, September, the beginning of September, they released Joy.
Good call.
And we're hearing a lot of these songs, you know, in this run, the Joy songs. So, and for our little look back, we hear the first version of Time Turns Elastic, which is something we'll talk more about, but
we should.
This was the first time that I kind of heard this like ambient jamming that they seemed to take through all these shows. They were groovy. Trey raged a lot. All those, you know, kind of things that you'd expect. But this ambient jam really stuck out to me, and it's the first time I heard it in this show. Jonathan mentioned
was that in Jabu?
Yeah, Jonathan mentioned that it's a gorgeous Jabu, and I think that's kind of where it stuck out for me. I love the tweezer into light. I thought that transition was wonderful. And it was kind of soft and patient. Something we don't see a ton of. I mean, there's, you know, I don't mean to make global statements, but these transitions I thought were really nice in this little run of shows as well. There was lots of nice flowy transitions between songs.
So, all right, Brad, let's talk about Time Turns Elastic. It's time. We have to do it. And this, so first of all, Time Turns Elastic. Let's revisit this. Okay. It was played first at Fenway at May 31st. I was there, and I'm not sure why that matters, except that that's just what people say sometimes.
Yeah. But what do you remember hearing it for the first time? Like, do you have any thoughts? Do you have any, you know, anything that sticks out?
I just know that, like, that Fenway show in general was a little bit strange for me, because I was in the stands. And it was, the sound wasn't great. Like, this year at Fenway, I know they brought their own, you know, the PAs, like they were doing on the lawns. But I, from what I understand, the sound at Fenway this time around in 2019 was, like, amazing. But it just, I felt a little disconnected from the show, and I don't really remember the Time Turns Elastic. I remember the tweezer, which was really fun. Another kind of tweezer, Time Turns Elastic, second set combo, which is interesting.
Yep.
Or in the same show. But Brad, this, so it's only been played 17 times, and the last time was 2010. So clearly this is a song that's been shelved. I think almost the entire Phish community is in kind of unanimity on something for once in support of this being shelved.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, nobody wants it to come back, but I kind of, like, I don't know. I hate to be that guy who likes Phish, but listening back to it, I was like, I don't think this is horrible. I mean,
it's not horrible.
I feel like it got a lot of flack.
It's
it got horrible. A lot of flack.
It's, I mean, it's not amazing. It's very Trey. It's so Trey. Everyone, you know, yeah. Looking, listening, going back and listening to it, it brought a smile to my face because it's clearly something from our boy. You know what I mean? Like it's, so much about it screams Trey, the lyrics, he talks about blowing wind and love. And I think he even says like, wrap your arms around the world. You know what I mean? Like all the things that he loves to talk about. He was doing it back then as he's doing it now. And the music is not, I was reading a review that said it was boring. It's not boring. You know, it's a long composed song. Yeah. The lyrics are a little cheesy, but you know, I think we love all that. At least I do. So, I don't have many complaints. I don't have complaints with it being shelved. I also don't have complaints going back and listening to it once in a show. I'm not going to, you know, seek it out, I think. Right. But also we mentioned in tell me about this, your thoughts on this, but I immediately thought of Petrichor as well. And I saw your notes that you said the same thing. I mean, I think it's Petrichor's, you know, older cousin who hasn't left his hometown or whatever you want to say.
Yeah. I think Petrichor is amazing. And I tweet often about a few songs. One is Petrichor, one is Night Moves, and then there's a few others. But whenever I tweet about Petrichor, someone inevitably, like almost immediately, brings up Time Turns Elastic. And they're like related, but I don't think they deserve to be put in the same category. Like I think Petrichor is such a cohesive, beautiful piece of music, you know, lyrically and musically. It's like, it's a much more mature version, but also like the music itself is in Petrichor, I think, is really powerful and beautiful. So I feel like,
I think it's a mature Trey too. If we're going back to, you know what I mean? Petrichor is completely 100% Trey as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, maybe that's just, you know, the evolution. And then, you know, it seems like over the past couple of years, you know, he's gotten more into like a little bit more groovy songwriting with Soul Planet and Set Your Soul Free and songs like that. But these were, Time Turns Elastic was an early 3.0, version, and the Petrichor is the later one. But I don't think you listeners should be putting them in the same category, because I think Petrichor is a masterpiece, and I think Time Turns Elastic is just like a little bit more disjointed. Although I think the orchestral performances and stuff, like that's probably pretty perfect. You know,
it's kind of what it's kind of what he envisions, I think, when he writes these.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, exactly. So they can play a Petrichor at any show. But let's go to the next night. Okay, so 21st, still in Cincy, Saturday night special, as our friend Patrick would say. But again, like kind of continuing this momentum to build, which I really do see this like 12 or 13 shows as like building a momentum toward this peak in Albany. But were there any jams in this second night of Cincy that you really liked?
You know, I think I mentioned that we didn't hear much in the 18th. I think we're starting to hear jams pretty consistently, a kind of a theme from Trey as well. The Melt, I thought, was incredible. Again, with these long set lists, we get a lot of songs that we don't get as much now, like a Ginseng or an Albuquerque, right? Or a first set Melt. I think it was first set, right? And so... you know, to me, one of the things you asked me what stuck out, I think Ocelot stuck out to me because I forgot how much I love these early 09, 10 Ocelots when they were new and fresh. And, not only that languid song that I really love, kind of a break, but it's a 10 or 11 minute break, that peaks at the end. And Trey kind of steps on it at the end. Going back and listening to an old Ocelot was fun for me.
Nice. Yeah, that that's interesting. And Jonathan said the same thing in his notes. And he also called the split Open and Melt a weirdo monster, which I agree with. I think that it's pretty out there for a late 2009 version. And to me, like these, and we've talked about this before, like when you hear something like a split Open and Melt getting out crazy out in the you know, ether, that's a good sign that they're feeling comfortable and kind of feeling like they can spread it out, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Torn and Frayed, I really wish that they would bring this back, because I really love it. I think it's just a, I feel like it's just a nice cover that, you know, it's got a good feel. I mean, obviously it's a classic song, but out of all those songs on Exile, it's one of my favorites, and I wish they would bring it back.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's right off the back end of Festival 8. Stuff was still kind of fresh, and they really, it's a great cover, great cover.
Yeah. So bring it back, guys. Torn and Frayed. Last time played, SPAC 2012, so it's time. All right. So, Brad, I think this second set, the Rock and Roll and a Ghost and If I Could, I think I've said this before, but like I love those drops after jams into like a nice ballad.
Sure.
And If I Could is just, it's just not played that much anymore. And I wish that they would kind of drop into it more frequently.
We almost get Mountains of the Mist more, which is crazy if you think about.
Yeah. Yeah. You're getting like one. Actually, the If I Could wasn't played between 729 2014 until November 2nd, 2018, which was the day after I left Vegas. So I still haven't seen If I Could since Polaris 98.
Which
is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, they can now that I've seen Mountains in the Mist, they can go ahead and play it.
Let's go back. Yeah.
You know, at a show I'm at. Did you like those, the Rock and Roll Ghosts? Like, did any of the jams stand out, or did they sound kind of standard based on what you know about this era?
No, I thought the Ghost was a little up tempo. I thought it was cool that it started pretty hot. Kind of disjointed, but it started hot, and then the groove at the end that turned into a jam was pretty fire. And Trey was kind of ragey, and he's kind of ragey throughout some of these shows. It's like you hear some young Trey almost peeking through in these shows, which, think about, 10 years is a long time ago, but you know, nothing like 92 or 93, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's then. And like you said, in Ocelot, even there's some of that as well, which is cool.
What about you?
Yeah, I really liked the Rock and Roll. The Rock and Roll was really funky. It had a lot of, I think, like a lot of good segments. It felt like there wasn't a lot of rushing through these jams in some of these shows. I mean, some of them there were, but like this jam particularly, and the Split Open and Melt, both from the show, felt like they were getting a sense of patience.
Yeah,
and this Rock and Roll has some of that ambience that you were talking about earlier.
Right, that's what I was just gonna say, that they call it a Cincy jam, I think, on Live Fish, but that end of that Rock and Roll jam was really slow and quiet and soft, and led to a nice beginning to that Ghost.
Yeah. So I thought that was a pretty cool segment, and the rest of it was sort of, you know, standard, but I think a good like two night run to wrap up that little run in Cincy. So we're going to move on to Syracuse. But first I want to just say a quick word about our sponsor, Circle. Brad and I have talked about this last time. Brad and I both have problems when we tell our kids 5 more minutes, because it just sometimes ends up being 5 more hours, at least for me.
Right.
So you can use Circle to set limits and end screen time debates with your kids once and for all. I use timers a lot with my kids and with my older one, and it actually works. So with all the things going on and all the distractions, you can actually try to kind of manage this stuff with Circle. It's the easiest way to manage your family's online time across all their connected devices inside and outside the home. So Circle Home Plus and the Circle app, as parents, you can filter what content is allowed, set limits for screen time, monitor history and usage, and you can keep track across all your devices. And each family member has a profile that's customizable to their needs and age, because you probably don't want your 5-year-old watching the same things as your 10-year-old. Maybe you do. And if you do, that's cool. But if you don't, you can use Circle to help address that. So right now, our listeners get $30 off of Circle Home Plus when you visit meetcircle.com/HFpod and enter HFpod at checkout. So, Brad, you can get $30 off when you visit meetcircle.com/HFpod and enter HFpod at checkout.
Thank you.
So, check it out. You'll never stop worrying about your kids, but with Circle, you'll have one less thing to worry about.
Do it.
All right. So, my kids are safe, and I'm heading to Syracuse for a Sunday night show. One-off Sunday night show in Syracuse.
Yeah. Weird.
It's a little bit weird, but, you know, good for them for kind of scheduling that, you know, and the routing. They could have taken a couple days off and just gone straight on to Philly. But I think this is a pretty overlooked show, sort of lower rated on Fish.net. A show that I rarely go back to, if ever. I'm sure we would listen to it like, you know, the day after it came out, but I'm not sure I've ever gone back to it. But I thought there was some good points in this, and there's a lot of kind of hometown banter and stuff for Fishman being from Syracuse throughout the whole show. But I thought the set one closer stash was really good, and again, like, kind of demonstrates this kind of patience that was developing in late 09.
What is a city without its music?
The legacy of the New York Philharmonic
is incredible. Nearly two centuries of history. That's a lot of music and a lot of stories.
I was sitting on stage for the very first time thinking, I can't quite believe this is happening.
Join me, Jamie Bernstein, as we explore the history of the New York Philharmonic. It's the NY Phil Story Made in New York, a podcast about a city, its people, and their orchestra. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
There's a lot of banter in all these. And it kind of shows they're comfortable. They're having fun. They're back together, you know?
Yeah.
And it's fun to hear that kind of stuff. We don't, you know, you don't get to hear it all the time, but.
And you know that, like, just based on recent Trey interviews that he's like that. I mean, we've always known that the humor and the joking and the banter and all that is like so important to the band, but I feel like a lot of his recent interviews, including what he told us for After Midnight, like, it's just such a big part of how they relate and communicate with each other and with the fans, you know.
Sure. The second set opener, Drowned, reminds me of a rock and roll. They kind of in the same category for me. Just, you know, the covers and the kind of classic rock kind of that they can take deep. They took both of them deep, and this Drowned is really nice. Really cool. What stood out for you?
Yeah, the Drowned is really great. I mean, I think the Drowned has like this, I don't know, there's it's like lots of different grooves and funky segments. And I always notice in some of these jams, Paige on the piano, sort of leading jams when Trey starts to hang back a little bit. And I think there's a little bit of that here that I think is just like really, really great, great jamming.
For me, I thought the Twist and Piper, I talk about it a lot, but I love Twist and Piper combined. I think they belong together. And this is one of the examples, yeah. You know what I mean? The Piper feeds off that Twist, I think, before it. And I thought this Piper is, the highlight of the show for me. It's just an insane ending. You know, you'd think they're going to back off at some point, and they don't. It's really fun to listen to Trey kind of push it forward and everybody catches up.
You have talked about that a lot. I know you love that combo. And I think 25 or so times that's been combined.
Nice.
Which is a lot for a couple songs to be, combined, you know, directly before
right,
or after.
Right.
So, and those are usually pretty good ideas, I think, you know? So good for them. Keep doing it.
Keep it up.
I feel like when they first came out, they were sort of different. They were complementary songs. Like you wouldn't, if you got a big like Piper at a show, you wouldn't necessarily get a Twist or vice versa. But, except for that show that we were both at, 12/6/97 with the Tweezer in Isabella in the Twist in the Piper,
yeah.
Which is, man, maybe that's what solidified that in your
right,
brain.
Exactly. I think that's why I think the way I do.
Moving on from Fishman's Hometown. Got a lot of shout outs. Big Black Furry Creatures.
Yeah, probably
from
the
Mars
longest, had, right? Ever. It was like a 9 minute Big Black Furry Creature from.
Yeah. And a First Tube Set 2 closer, which is always a lot of fun. So let's go. We're going. So they take a day off Tuesday night of Thanksgiving, the Wachovia Center, which became the Wells Fargo Center, which is still where the Flyers and Sixers play.
Yeah,
but
it's relatively newish, especially in 2009.
Yeah. So two nights there, and what'd you think of this first show? I thought the Chalk Dust opener was pretty blazing hot. It felt like they were in the groove and ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think this to me is the highlight of this run, and it may just be the set list, but it's got everything. It's these sets are full of amazing songs that I'd always want to hear. And it's just one night on a Tuesday. It's really awesome. But yeah, the Chalk Dust, the Bathtub in the first set, I thought was just an incredible start.
These two were the last indoor Fish shows in the city of Philadelphia,
wow.
Which I think that streak will be broken this December 3rd for the Sirius XM show, which will be at the Met in Philly, right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's my.
I complain about them not coming out here, but they haven't been to an indoor show in Philly for 10 years. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Camden and the Man, and you know they're playing, you know, they're playing around there, but I don't know if anyone from Philly minds, but if you do, let us know, or just go to that show on the 3rd, because it'll be super easy to get tickets, so don't worry about
they're
it.
They're everywhere.
Just show up and you'll be fine. I really like this whole first set. I think, for me, like, the Curtain Width, the Wedge, and Reba, a Bathtub Gin, Chalk Dust, Cities, Camel Walk, like, there's almost, and even MoMA and Golgi and Stealing Time, like, those are all fine songs, too. This is, like, it's a great looking first set on paper for someone like me.
Yeah, I totally agree, and that's, I think, what I was trying to say was a MoMA dance is a dance party in the first set. The Stealing Time's new, and it's a raucous closer with also, you know, you could switch Stealing Time and Chalk Dust. You know what I mean? Like it's just a well-rounded, solid first set.
You know, I think Santos is the new Stealing Time. That's my new theory that I just developed right now. The second set, the Down With Disease jam is really, really, really good. And they kind of really do, again, like out there, really good different sections, and eventually gets kind of spacey and ambient and segues into 20 years later.
Thank you.
But there's like a mid-set to Harry Hood and a Mike's Groove. Pretty good. I like it.
Yeah, it's a Mike's Simple Slave Groove, which is incredible. Mango Song, everybody kind of chases that, even if they've seen it before. You know, really the thing that sticks out to me is that they didn't finish the Down With Disease. Just, I mean, come on. Just kidding. I don't give a shit. They always, you gotta.
It's funny that it's even noted. Right. Like, when do they finish Down With Disease? The last time they finished it was like 94.
Yeah, I think it was on the MTV video. I think last time.
Last finish Down With Disease. the Week of Pog is notable and maybe well known from this show because they started and then they go into the jam and then they slow down the tempo and then they play a more funky version and then, you know, there's like some Week of Pog, you know, antics going on there, which is cool and a good way to end the show. And the next night, I found this really surprising because, again, going back as sort of trying to remove myself a little bit from this, from what I thought about these shows before, but the next night, the second night in Philly on fish.net has a 2.7 rating out of 5. And I thought that was like, I mean, you know, this is there are reasons I think for that, but I thought some of these jams in here were really solid. But
yeah.
Did you, if you hadn't known the 2.7 rating, would you, after listening to this, would you have been like, oh yeah, I'd give that a 2.7?
No way. And in fact, if I would have known, I would have said I would have given it like a 4.6 or something, right?
just to mess with the man.
Yeah, you know.
Or the not the man.
No, it's, I mean, Kill Devil Falls is new. I thought it was just raging. Sugar Shack, you know, Haley's in the Divided Sky. I mean, come on. All these things are great. That new Young Ocelot. And the
Young Ocelot.
That's right.
So adorable.
The opener, The Birds of the second set, I thought was amazing. I thought it was a great jam.
I agree. I thought the Birds jam, I mean, the first set is like, you know, it's fine, but I think the Haley's Divided Sky is a cool combo. Bringing back, you know, like, I don't know. I don't really see a lot of problems with this, but Sleep Again was the second time played, which is cool to hear. So I think... maybe this is like, you know, we've had a lot of conversations about this with the fish.net ratings. Like, is it that at the time people, you know, rated this in like lower, or is it that people are going back and like saying like, eh, show sucks. Two stars. I don't know. But
maybe they think that like 2.5 is average. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, yeah, it's like a little bit above average.
I mean, it's probably good that people like me aren't in charge because I think most things are probably better than most people do. So I'll just like stay out of it. but the Birds of a Feather jam is really, really cool. And really Mike and Paige kind of driving it. And they do notably finish Birds of a Feather, which is very important. like farmhouse, which I, for some reason to me, felt like so appropriate. It was like, I just really liked it. And the Birds jam, I wouldn't have known if you'd said that was like a late 2012, 2013 jam. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then the Farmhouse and a Tweezer, which again, like another good, probably slightly underrated 2009 Tweezer, but you know, YEM in the middle of a second set is cool. It might feel like a little bit of like a, man, I wish this was at the end, you know?
Yeah, a little weird.
20 minutes or something of, and then you get another 20-minuter there before Tweezer Reprise.
Minuter?
Brad's favorite. Yeah. Brad's favorite, Time Turns Elastic. So I wonder if that is like, even just people looking at the set list, like being like, eh, Time Turns Elastic, that's 20 minutes, I can't get back. Like I'm rating the show lower. I don't know, but it's, it was heavily in rotation, you know, in 2009. And, I feel like people were angry about it, and that's not cool.
You skipped over Esther, though. I mean, that's like the highlight of that YEM Esther Time Turned Elastic run, right?
Good point. Good that's point. Like, yeah. No, that.
But looking back, beautiful. They played. Oh, it's incredible. I'm still chasing it, and they played it four times in 2009, and they've played it five times since. So they were clearly. I don't know if they'd practiced it for Hampton or you know revisited, but it was fresh. In 2009, and it's not anymore.
And you've never seen it?
I don't think so. Not that I can recall.
Yeah, I've seen three. Last was, well, 2017, but before that was 2010, and then once in 98 at Virginia Beach. So
yeah, I didn't go to that Virginia Beach show.
Yeah, you need to get... When Brad needs his Esther, whoever's listening. All right, so Brad, we go on to the three final shows of this leg. Leading up to what I think anyone would consider the peak of the tour, the second night of Albany. But the first night, so I went to these two Albany shows and the Portland show, and I took my brother-in-law,
That's right.
Who you know, yeah. And he loves music. He's a music fan, and he lived near there, about an hour away, and we spent Thanksgiving there, and then I convinced him to come to the show with me. And he had a really good time, first of all, and that was kind of cool, just being like, taking someone to something that you're like, maybe this is not going to be that enjoyable, or I'm going to feel like a jerk for taking someone to a show they're not going to enjoy. But turns out, like, jamming and having fun at a rock show is not that hard.
Right, right.
But they played On Your Way Down, obviously, in this, well, not obviously, if you look at the set list, you'll know. And that's a Little Feat song, and my brother-in-law is a huge Little Feat fan. Well, I guess it's an Alan Toussaint song, but Little Feat covered it, and it's
right.
Sort of like well known, but you know, as a Little Feat song. And Paige does a lot of singing in that song. And after that song, he knew what it was right away and was super psyched. And he was like, "I'll never forget what he said, which was, why don't they just let the piano player sing every song?" So that's the most notable memory from this show. There's a lot of songs. Again, 24 songs, I think, total, which is a lot of songs, especially, you know, 12 song first set seems normal, but, you know, 11, 12 song second set is a lot. It seems like that was a little bit of a pattern, though, even throughout these shows.
Yeah, and My Friend Into Golden Age, I think, deserves some attention as well. It's a great second set opener, and then it's the debut of that TV on the Radio cover. That's really become a favorite, I think. I love hearing it.
Oh, yeah.
So,
man. Wow.
Right. And then...
Kind of amazing that is one of, like, the big... I mean, like, there's Energy by Apples and Stereo, right? It was kind of the other, like...
Yeah.
Kind of recent, follow, right, new... Right. But, like...
It's definitely been shelved.
Sort of gone
right,
away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Golden Age continues to deliver amazing jams. It's cool.
Don't forget the timbre as well. You're getting a lot of songs, so you get these kind of... songs that really stick out to me on set lists. And Timber was the one that stuck out to me in the first set.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. And there's sort of an interesting thing that we haven't really touched on is like the songs that were still being brought back at this point in 2009. So I think this was the first and only performance of Two Versions of Me in 3.0. There were a lot of songs that were kind of being brought back still at this point. And you know, not like obviously not Down with Disease or songs like that, but there were like there were songs that hadn't been played in a while that people were happy to hear. Timber, this was only the second time played since they came back, so people were kind of getting reoriented with some of their favorites live, which I think is a kind of a cool and underrated part of this tour. You know, you're hearing these songs again, and maybe we thought we'd never hear them again, which we hadn't really talked about.
No. Well, yeah, right. This is, they had a pretty substantial summer tour though. But those are all outdoor venues, and this is kind of the return of what Phish was to me before the 5-year hiatus, which was like indoor, cooler weather, fall shows before Thanksgiving, after Thanksgiving, you know, just kind of that time of the year. Yeah. And it's this was it. And to me, it wasn't really solidified. One of the reasons I actually didn't travel out east for it is because I wasn't sure, you know what I mean? I just still wasn't completely sold that it was something I was going to dive back into all the way, I guess.
Yep.
And I was wrong, turns out.
It turns out we dove back in. And then a couple of years later, we created a podcast about all of our favorite Phish. All right, so we'll move on to the second night of Albany. Brad, for me, this second set, this is when I knew Phish was back, and I'll never forget this second set, one of the most enduring Phish memories I have. But before we get there, was there anything in the first set that stood out to you that would like set this up, or
no?
Yeah, I guess I'll
you know, I mean, Another Foam was played, a Split Open and Melt in the first set as well. Again, mm-hmm. I mean. Stuff that we're not accustomed to anymore, I guess, or whatever. I miss Alaska. I do like that song.
Yeah.
But I also like Ocelot, so you can say what you will about me. But look, this is...
Oh, I will.
The second set is 45-ish minutes, the first two songs. I mean, this is kind of back to where we were, you know, late 1.0, and kind of... the Phish that we all knew or loved or whatever you want to say, right? It's back.
Yep.
And I remember you specifically telling me, you know, I think they're back. Like, I don't know if you texted me or sent me a letter in the post, but
I think I definitely sent you a letter in the post. Yeah. The first set was sort of like, you know, it was just sort of a lot of songs, kind of a little bit of a meandering walk through the first set, but the first Vultures since 2004, so they continue to kind of bring back songs that hadn't been played in a while. But so the second set, so I was on the floor and I was with a few friends and my wife, and the Seven Below starts, right? And it's like, cool, Seven Below. And then probably like, I don't know, 7 minutes in, it's like really, really rocking, like upbeat. And the Phish.net jam chart description is it's reminiscent of a mid-90s bathtub gin, which I think is a good way to describe it. And then like around 11 minutes, it feels to me like they're going into 2001, but then Trey kind of like redirects. And I'm wondering, listening back most recently, like it reminds me of the Ruby Waves from Alpine, and that like, were they purposefully like, we're not going to end this, we're going to keep going, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then right after that, they around 12 minutes to get into this great chord progression from Trey, which just reminds me of like a classic rock song, and they're just jamming. But then it gets darker, and then around 20 minutes there's just this glorious peak, and I think we should listen to this glorious peak right now so that you all don't miss
it. Yes.
Thank you.
So, Brett, I remember the lights. I remember the celebrating. I remember, like, the joy inside the arena. I feel like it was, like, a very... Between band and audience, I feel like everyone felt like this is, like, kind of a big moment. And then the Ghost, of course, they went into, again, like you said, another 20 minutes. There was some Cool It Down jamming in the Ghost, which I think was, you know... They played Cool It Down after, but between the Seven Below and the Ghost, after 45 minutes, they just stopped. It wasn't like the Providence Bowie where they stopped and like took a bow, but it was like they just stopped for a second, and you can hear the crowd just like so happy. And then playing Cool It Down was just a perfect way to you know, cap off that three song part of the second song.
I was having it's a little bit of a non sequitur, but you're used to that with me, RJ. I was having the chicken and the egg discussion with my 6-year-old this morning, you know, and it's
like the actual,
yeah, for sure.
Not like a metaphor, but no, like the actual,
we were
chicken
actually
and egg.
Talking okay. about it. And, but so I think you can apply that here. Did they, you know, think about this, before, right. And it went in a way that he was imagining Trey, right. The jam, or did this all come from him just kind of pushing it? And it hadn't been discussed. And I think people have that argument, I think, with the Ruby Waves and the Tahoe Tweezer, right? Those sorts of mm-hmm, things. Mm-hmm. This is one of those moments in Phish. It's seminal, right? It's the first time, yeah. I think, of this whole year, they've been playing since March, that you knew that this is, you know, this is what we come here for, sort of thing.
That's a really good way to put it. And you hear these, like we've talked about a bunch of these jams, the Birds of a Feather and the Down with Disease and the, you know, a lot of the jams we've talked about in this episode. And none of us really knew that it was leading up to this, like, just wonderfully glorious second set. But this is, it actually, just to expand on what you just said, it kind of is perfectly encapsulates Phish. It's like, you go through these, you go to shows and like not all shows are as good as you want them to be, or they don't play what you want. And then like, when you're least expecting it, they just fucking deliver, and then you're back, like you're back. Just they fucking deliver, and then they encore with you, Enjoy Myself, and it's just like, all right, fuck you guys,
yep,
we're out of here. Any doubters can go fuck off. But they're just beautiful and glorious, and they wrap up this holiday weekend. I got to go to Portland, Maine, my only show, Phish show in Maine.
Were you planning on going, or was this like, holy shit, I gotta catch the next one, you know?
That's a good point. Yeah. We were planning on going. We had tickets, GA, so we had to go, and we had a nice time with friends in Portland, you know?
It's a small place, right? 7,000 or so at Cumberland County.
Yeah, exactly. And I had never been in there before, and it's such a like historic venue, and it lived up to the hype in terms of being a beautiful place with nice energy, but not beautiful place for like getting beers or going to the bathroom. But I really think this is a little bit of an overlooked show just because of the night before. There's a really good segments in the second set, but and a Mike's song to finish the first set. I just don't think there's like a lot of recognition for this show. Did you like it going back to it?
Yeah. I thought the Mike's was a highlight for sure. But I'd point out some of the bust outs, I think, and that's the Nellie Kane and the Meat. Crimes of the Mind has only been played once since then. It's only been played a handful of times total. The Freebird, the acapella Freebird, I mean, they don't do that anymore. That's probably, you know, lends to the arena or venue, but there was some, I mentioned it, this is the night or a few nights before the 3-night run at the Garden, which they weren't going to do for New Year's, and they went to Miami for 4 nights for New Year's. So to me, this was a nice kind of end to our recap in that it's a great show. There's some bust outs. And December is kind of on its own.
Yeah, exactly. And it felt like the end of a run for sure. And the Crimes of the Mind, which I think is really fun, and they last played at 2016 before that epic Golden Age in Vegas. And I saw the last two versions before that, this one and then the one before that, which was in 2003. So
nice,
kind of cool. It's only been played 8 times.
I saw that. And, I saw the Vegas one with our friend Todd, the LP guru. And we were just kind of, you know, there's one of those. We looked at each other, especially after that Golden Age, but.
Yeah, I can't believe you get to see that show. That's so cool. Well, this had some highlights, and we're gonna actually, maybe we should wrap up, and we will leave you with a jam from that Portland show, and send you off into the night. And Brad, this is fun, man.
This
is
good
to go back, and I think going back to what I said at the beginning, if you all like this format, like, let us know. If you're like missing full sets, let us know. And we just want to hear from everybody. So give us a review on Apple Podcasts, or follow us on Spotify, or just tell people that you like what we're doing. Cause it's been now, I think, pretty much officially 6.5 years, Brad, of us doing this. And I'm still having fun. Brad, can you still have
fun? Yeah, there's no quit. There's no quit over here, bruh.
All right, we're going to leave it there. We're going to be back in 2 weeks. I think the next episode is probably going to be some kind of, you know, talking about
December
fall tour.
Right?
We got to do it. I'm about to go, actually, 2 weeks from today when our next episode comes out, I'll be on my way to Pittsburgh to see the Fish. But maybe we'll do a little quick hit wrap-up of the Thanksgiving weekend shows.
Awesome.
So, yeah, everyone have fun out there, and thanks for joining. Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Arge.
Talk to y'all later. Keep on rocking.
With autumn closing in, night moon.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.